Welcome to Talent Hub Talk. I am Ben Duncombe, and on this podcast, I will be interviewing prominent and inspirational figures from both the local ANZ and global Salesforce Ohana. In today's episode, we are joined by Chris Baldock. Chris is the CTO of Cloudworks, a Salesforce consulting partner in Sydney. He's also a Salesforce certified technical architect and has been so for a little while now. In the episode, we talk about Chris's career, how he got into the Salesforce ecosystem and the roles that he has played over the years. Also, the kind of companies he's worked for, which have all been consulting companies in the Salesforce ecosystem, but at different kind of tiers and sizes. So we compare what it's like to work for different size consulting organizations. We discuss the path to CTA, his journey to CTA specifically, and what he kind of learned along that way and what he'd have done differently, if anything. We also look at managing teams and how he has taken to team management or team leadership and mentoring people that now report to him. And we get a good overview of what still keeps Chris excited and how he continues to learn and grow as an individual. So really, really interesting episode, really for anyone that's interested in becoming a CTA, leading a team, or working in consulting. This is a great episode for you to listen to, and I really hope you enjoy it. If you do, please do subscribe for future episodes.
Chris, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
No, our pleasure. Great to have you on the show, and really excited to hear more about your story and share that with our audience. So you're from the UK, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. I think I moved out here about 7 years ago.
Yeah. Like, let's look at the early years, not too early, but what did you want to be growing up, and were you a technologist?
Well, it's funny. Yeah, it's funny you say like not too early, because if you go like really far back, it was spy or wizard, like the two that I was interested in.
Yeah.
But that didn't really work out. So, you know what? Like, I did a computer science degree.
Okay.
And so as part of that, all of my internships were as a developer in various banks. And looking back, I think I actually had a really good time in those banks, but I remember coming out of them thinking, like, for whatever reason, this doesn't work for me.
Sure.
It just didn't really click or resonate. And then I did what a lot of people do when they leave university and have no idea what to do. I joined a giant consulting firm. So I joined Accenture in the hopes that they would help me kind of work it out, you know?
Sure. So what were your, within Accenture, what were your early days like? Was that straight into Salesforce, or was that something else?
So it was a funny process. So when I joined Accenture, they were hiring like crazy. They probably still are hiring like crazy. And when we joined, we were given a form where it asks you to fill in, you know, what you've done previously and what you'd like to do. And then my experience, maybe this wasn't everyone's experience, is they kind of, the things I wanted to do weren't necessarily adhered to, and they put me on the next available project, which is like a giant insurance project, in hindsight, like, I got a lot of good learnings out of it.
So they didn't have any opportunities for spies or wizards?
No, sadly not. I know, right?
That's what you listed, hey? So you were on an insurance project, but what were you in a developer role? Like, what were you put in to do?
So I guess I was like a sort of techno-functional BA. It was like the part that I was involved in was a massive data migration effort. So the project was all about putting in a brand new custom-built application online for, it was a policy system. So for capturing, creating, editing policies, like insurance policies.
Okay, so then how did you then find your way into Salesforce?
So that was quite fortunate, actually. So I was introduced to the head of the Salesforce practice in the UK, which is a guy called Daniel Shahan. And we had a coffee. I don't know. He told me about Salesforce. I thought it sounded really great. I must have made a good impression, because we kind of kept on talking. And then eventually, it took a little while, just because I was on an existing project and, you know, they weren't in a situation where they could have me released. But eventually he organized for me to go on what was then the DevFloor 1 training. Did that, loved it, got certified quite quickly, and then just kept on talking to him, and eventually got me on the project.
Nice. And then you stayed in the UK for a while before moving to Australia?
So I was probably in Accenture for, so once I got into Salesforce practice, I was probably there for about a year, maybe a year and a half before I made the move. I was actually very happy within the practice there, doing lots of really interesting things, really great team. Just around the same time, my wife and I decided that we were going to do the dream of moving and moving abroad. And my wife, or then girlfriend, was half Australian. So her dream was always to do it in Australia. My dream was to do it somewhere. And so we kind of combined dreams and decided to make Australia happen.
Yeah, cool. So then what was the market like when you first got here? Did you land in Australia and say, I need a Salesforce job? Or did you line that up before you came over?
So I was really lucky. I actually tried to make it work with Accenture first. But for whatever reason, it was just taking a really long time. Through a mutual contact, I reached out to a guy called Ari Bradshaw, who at the time was working for Cloud Sherpas. And he organized like a formal interview with Cloud Sherpas at the time, interviewed with them. Stephen Herrod did my technical interview, got a job offer. And I was really lucky. I managed to kind of land a job offer with Cloud Sherpas before coming over. And then I couldn't be more lucky, because it was just the perfect place for me at where I was at the time in my career.
Sure. So what would you have sold yourself as at that point? Like a developer or?
So I guess kind of like a techno-functional EA at that point in time. Like I was mostly a business analyst, but like one with a bit of a technical edge to him.
Yeah.
He put into the functional team when I joined Cloud Sherpas. But then I ended up, because I kind of had this technical background, because I guess I like technology and I like programming, like solving kind of technical-esque problems, I just gradually navigated my way into the technical team.
Okay. And have you ever really been like a pure coder on a Salesforce project, or have you always had that kind of mindset and technical functional start to anything you've delivered?
So I think in most projects, in a lot of my kind of early days in Cloud Sherpas, there was a lot of projects where I was doing a lot of code. That being said, I've always been someone who's played it a little bit in the middle. So I've never really designated myself to technical consultant, functional consultant. I've always kind of seen myself as just being quite adaptable and just kind of filling whatever gap needed to be filled.
Sure.
Often was development. But I've always liked both sides.
And just coming back to the computer science degree that you have, do you feel that made you a better developer than, you know, if you hadn't have gone down that path? Did that really help with becoming a Salesforce developer?
So that definitely helped. So both during the computer science degree and during all of my internships doing development as a developer, that definitely gave me a foundation which made it easier to get into the development side of Salesforce.
Sure. And then at what point did you see the Salesforce Certified Technical Architect certification and say, that's my path, I'm going to become a CTA?
So that was a pretty gradual process. And again, I think a lot of it was, like, I'm hesitant to use the word luck, because I've always worked hard and I've always worked towards it. But I was lucky to be part of Cloud Sherpas at the time, because I had the likes of Stephen Herrod, who when I joined was already a CTA and an MVP. And then shortly after him, you had Andrew Manitakis and then David Thomas become CTAs. And then we had like Isan in Melbourne. It was like a breeding ground for CTAs. So I was really lucky to be within that environment and be surrounded by other people who were either a CTA or progressively moving towards that path, or even if not moving towards the path of CTA, the type of, like, my colleagues were all getting, like, were all into learning and were getting loads of certifications. And so that combined with my personality just made it a really good environment for me. And at the beginning, it wasn't about being a CTA. It was just about learning as much of Salesforce as I could, which also involved just kind of picking up certs. So I kind of went from, when I joined Cloud Sherpas, I just had my Dev 401, and then like in pretty quick succession, I got my like admin, Sales Cloud, Service Cloud, Dev 501, was it Dev 502? I can't remember. The advanced developer.
Yeah.
And then I was just kind of working through them. Like at that point in time, like having five certs was like a big deal.
Yeah.
Which is funny to look back at, because like now everyone has five certs or more.
Yeah.
To the point where in Cloud Sherpas, if you've got five certs, you've got a jacket that says 5X Club. It was a thing. And so I just kept working at it. And then the architect certs came along, and I just started chipping my way through those. And at some point, the giant mountain that was CTA just kind of like became less and less and less intimidating. And I forget at one point, but at some point I kind of, I don't know, hinted to Stephen that, hey, this is something I think I'd be interested in going for. And I think he said something along the lines of like, yeah, okay, maybe that makes sense. And then it became a go. And then I started kind of working in earnest towards it.
Yeah, just on to your point about that team at Sherpas, I remember the team because I was kind of just into the market maybe a year or two around that point. And it was just like an incredible team, wasn't it? It would be so hard to recreate that now, but it must have been an amazing team to be in and amongst.
It was awesome. And I was so lucky to have landed there through a mutual connection.
Yeah, yeah. And Ari, another great guy who I think he's in Spain these days, right?
He is, but he actually might be coming back to Australia this year.
Oh, that hot off the press.
Hot off the press, yeah. Just found out the other day, actually, yeah.
Yeah, nice. So from the moment you've got Stephen's kind of go-ahead, how do you then plan to go, right, I've got my, I've got the application architect, the system architect. I'm now going to put a plan in place to achieve the CTA. What did that look like? How was that whole journey for you?
So it was a journey of many parts. So I guess I started my journey to some degree, like I guess already to that point, there'd always been this like large lead up to get to the point that I was actually going to go for it. And most of that was predominantly at Cloud Sherpas, who then became Accenture. And then I started to receive a bit of mentorship from Andrew Minotakis, who's also a CTA. And so he kind of like started to kind of guide me on, you know, what to focus on, and started to kind of grill me on certain topics. So he kind of got me working on that path. And then not too long into that, I made the decision to move from, it was Accenture at the time, to SaaS Focus, predominantly just because they were, well, I guess I'd had a good tenure at Cloud Sherpas Accenture. I was already maybe thinking about what my next move was, and then an opportunity came along to be the head of architecture, which for me at the time, I think was a really good move and a really good role for me to move into. Mm-hmm. And then at some point in SaaS Focus, I just kind of agreed with Amit, who was the CEO of SaaS Focus Australia, that we're going to go for it. And I just started at that point for my first attempt, just kind of working by myself, but also working a bit alongside Yanis, because also very fortunate, me and Yanis were both at Cloud Sherpas at the same time. Both had similar backgrounds, and we were both going for CTA at the same time. And so that was also really helpful to be going for it at the same time with him, because we also would have phone calls after work sometimes. We'd kind of, you know, we'd discuss scenarios. And also, I think that kind of provided a little bit of healthy competition between the two of us as well.
Yeah.
Like, I actually remember, like, there was a time where I think I was maybe putting off started rising really hard. And then I think he called me and told me that he was going to go for it. And then I think that was exactly the kind of the nudge that I needed, to start kind of working a bit harder towards it. So that was, it was really helpful to have him, you know, going through it at the same time.
Sure. It's interesting you mentioned about the move between Accenture at the time and SaaS Focus, because we see a lot of people that, you know, they're looking at, I want to be a CTA and my next career step has to enable me to get to that point. So what was it about that move that helped? Was it because you were the head of architecture, right? So
yeah.
Did you get that role that everyone seems to want, where they're sitting across all of the projects?
It did help. I would say that it's important, but not essential. It is important, though. So I think where it was helpful for me is, one of the things that you tend to get when you work for a large consultancy is you, and there's pros and cons to all of this, is you can have projects that span, instead of months, span years. And my personal experience is, when you first start on a project or a role, you have a, you know, vastly accelerated learning curve because there's so much to learn. But then the longer and longer you're there, your learning curve starts to dip a little bit.
Yeah.
It starts to flatten. So what I got moving to SaaS Focus was, instead of just being on one project and predominantly this being a very large project, often lasting more than 1 year, I was now often on two or three projects, and the projects were much smaller in size. So typically a project would last between 3 and 6 months. And I was across multiple of them. And so, and at the time I was the only, architect And so I was having to do all that kind of high level solution design. And so that was really helpful to me because it just exposed me to a great number of challenges and scenarios basically to apply my skills to. So that was a really good learning environment to me.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think a lot of people are looking for those scenarios, right? And if you can get them on the job rather than just have them, mock theory ones presented to you, it would be a big help.
It's helpful. Theory, you can go really far with theory, but obviously to really know your topic, like having the practical experience helps a lot.
Yeah, for sure. So obviously you're now a CTA, right? You've gone through the whole journey and you are helping others. You've put in place in your current role. I know you're bringing people on that journey and helping others. But what would you have done differently now if you went back to the beginning?
Yeah. So if I look at the things that were really helpful for me and the things I would do differently. So one thing which was extremely helpful was having a CTA coach, which I didn't have so much the first time. So the majority of the first time was just me and Yanis trying to work it out, basically. And then just kind of testing each other and just kind of working towards the same goal. And the very first time I sat the exam, you get marked out of seven, this kind of seven sections. I got two out of the seven and I failed five. And then I was very lucky going into the second attempt. I was brought into a program that Salesforce were piloting, whereby you'd be paired with a CTA at Salesforce. And I was paired with David Norris, who was just awesome. And he provided me with a lot of guidance and a kind of a lot of steering, which kind of really helped to keep me on path and kind of help me understand, you know, what are the sorts of things I need to be focusing on, to what level of degree, what level of detail do I need to go into, you know, how do I structure a presentation and play it back within a review board, you know, scenario. And so that was incredibly helpful for me. So then the second attempt, I narrowly missed the pass. I got five out of the seven. And then on the third attempt, I was doing it by myself, but off the back of having all this guidance from David.
Sure.
And obviously kind of going into the third time, so having learned a lot. And so then I passed the third time. So CTA coach, if you can get one, super, super helpful. I think in hindsight, I'm a very detailed person. I think I probably went a little bit too detailed in some areas. But it's quite hard to strike that balance, especially if you don't have that coach. So I ended up making my own flashcards. I think I made just short of 2,000, something like 1,800 flashcards, which was a lot. I think in hindsight, I probably could have gotten by with about 1,000.
Wow.
In terms of theory that you need to know. But there's no shortcuts. Like, there's just a huge amount of knowledge that you have to learn. And flashcards are really good for that. Spaced repetition learning, really, really effective way of not just learning something, but keeping it in your memory.
Sure.
So, yeah. So in hindsight, having a coach was super helpful to me. I probably went a little bit too detailed, but I think that's maybe it. Like, there's kind of no escaping. You have to put a lot of work into it.
Yeah. So when you first attempted it, you got two out of the seven. Did you know going in that they were your two strongest areas, or was it a complete surprise?
So I'm historically one of these people that will sometimes go into an exam and come out. I'm an optimist, so I'll come out thinking like, yeah, nailed it. And so I remember coming out of that scenario thinking like, hey, maybe that was pretty good. Like, maybe I passed this because like I got through the scenario. I thought like I solved the majority of things. And so I actually came out of it feeling reasonably good. And so it was a little bit of a hit to my confidence when I got the two out of seven.
Sure.
But what I've since learned since then is it's only half of the exam is knowledge. The other half is all about the scenario and how you tackle a scenario and how you play it back to a panel of judges. So it's I think at that point I had reasonable knowledge, but obviously still some gaps. But I think there was lots of room at the time after my first attempt to improve how I digested the scenario and then presented it back to a panel of judges.
Sure. I ask this question a lot because I think there are misconceptions with like the CTA, like the whole process, right? So you see the journey to CTA hashtag a lot and things like that. And I've never gone through the process, but I've spoken to a lot of CTAs. I will never go through the process because I'm not a Salesforce professional, right? So maybe I'm talking out of turn. But it appears that people seem to think they're a lot closer to being a CTA in a lot of cases than perhaps they are, because, you know, people do foul it, and people foul it quite often. So what are the misconceptions you see?
Yeah, so I think that can be true. I think there's various misconceptions. I think one of the main things is I think there's probably a lot of people don't really... I think when I think of CTA, I think of like a finite body of knowledge that you have to learn. It's a lot of knowledge, but it is finite. But because it's a lot, you do have to be pretty self-motivated and persistent. And you just have to just keep grinding, especially if you kind of go in with the expectation that you're almost certainly not going to pass the first time, not to mention the exam is really expensive. And so you probably need to have someone sponsor you. There's a lot of gateways to go through in order to become a CTA. So I think a lot of people don't really appreciate how long that journey is. And I think the amount of persistence and hard work that's involved. So I think that's kind of one of the misconceptions, especially when you compare that to the multiple choice exams. Relatively speaking, those are pretty simple. Like, obviously, I don't want to take away from them, because when I was going through those multiple choice exams, that really helped me to get to the next level of my career. So I learned a lot just from going through those. But there's kind of like the amount of knowledge, both depth and breadth, that you need to know to pass the multiple choice. And then there's like the amount of knowledge you need to pass to become a CTA. And they're different mountains. And the CTA one is just, it's just a higher mountain, really.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think one of the misconceptions is maybe like just the amount of work that's involved. And I think another misconception is that you really need to be good at self-motivation. No one can provide you that motivation. It's a long journey, and you just have to be really persistent.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Cool. So, how do you keep motivated now? Because you're a young guy. You're a CTA, and a lot of people see that as like the end goal.
Yeah. It's not. It's not. It's like it's like any goal. That kind of like, or like any mountain, you climb it, and you're like, yeah, and you have your moment of appreciating it, and then you kind of look around and you realize that there's another mountain to climb, and I don't think it ever stops. It's just different types of mountains. So. In one sense, it did change my focus. So obviously, I try to keep up with the release notes and I try to keep up with like the new platform developments, and I stay in touch with the community. But I think my focus has shifted. Now my key focus is all about, well, there's a few of them. So one of the key focuses is all about process. So I think one thing that can maybe be a little bit missed. If you kind of grow up in a large consultancy firm as a, you know, technical architect, is the focus and process. Because when you're on large projects, large teams, you often have a whole team of business analysts or functional consultants who are, you know, really looking at the process, breaking those down into requirements, and you kind of have the luxury of having those handed over to you, and then you have to just solve them. Mm-hmm. You know, what is the best way to solve these requirements using the tools that Salesforce provides you? When you work for a smaller consultancy, you no longer have that luxury, and it kind of opens your eyes to the importance of process. And so now where my focus is predominantly is all about tools and approaches for rapidly understanding an existing process within a client that a client has. And then, you know, looking for areas where it could be improved. So looking for pain points. Just looking for a way that a particular technology in Salesforce could, you know, massively alleviate maybe the time to perform those steps, maybe improve user experience, maybe improve customer experience. You know, there's this kind of a famous saying that you've got like, you know, people, process, and technology. I guess now my focus is really kind of, you know, learning to be a better architect on the people and process front.
Sure. And do you continue now to expand outside of Salesforce, and like, are you broadening your knowledge and continuing to kind of look at the larger ecosystem outside of the Salesforce world?
So I think to some degree, I'm intentionally not trying to become an expert in another set of technologies like AWS. I think that's like a viable path for some people, but I think my focus is really about, it's Salesforce, and it's the periphery technologies that you can use to solve common business challenges. And so you do need to look outside of Salesforce or, and this is actually one of the things that that the CTA process is really good for, is it's not enough just to know Salesforce. You have to know all about, you know, how and when you would use an enterprise service bus versus the ETL tool. You need to know not just about file storage and Salesforce, but, you know, what are your other options for storing files outside of Salesforce? And so I think the CTA process was a really good, like really powerful process for exposing me to those periphery technologies, but it kind of never stops. So with every new client that I take on, there's always some new challenge that I haven't solved before.
Sure.
And quite often that means learning about some other technology outside of Salesforce that I haven't used before.
Yeah, nice. And another area that we find a lot of technical people and people that have gone down the not necessarily that are CTAs, but that are working towards becoming CTAs, so laser focused on that goal, that they don't necessarily want to manage people or lead teams because they're like, this is going to distract me from the goal of being a CTA. You working at SaaSfocus, you were the lead architect. You're now the CTO of CloudWorks. So has managing people helped in the process, but also was that something you always wanted to do, and has it come naturally?
So I think it has helped in the process, and I'll talk about that in a sec. And I think it probably has come naturally to some degree. I remember the first project at Accenture where I was given a team, and I think it was, so my first Salesforce project was actually a Viva project, which is a managed package on top of Salesforce. And then there was a large amount of integration work to be performed. And because I came from a sort of a technical background, I was given the role of integration lead, which was really great learning for me. And I was given a team of like 6 Informatica developers. Obviously, I'd never used Informatica at this point in time. I'd never really done any integration before, but I kind of got the concepts. That's kind of one of the good things about joining a large consultancy is sometimes you can get thrown into these scenarios and you just have to learn really quickly. It was really good for me in that regard. So I think I was kind of given management responsibilities pretty early on. And I think looking back, I think I did a reasonable job. Like I think I was able to like effectively manage the team pretty well. I was able to delegate work amongst them. And I really care about the people I work with, especially the people who kind of look up to me, really genuinely care about them. And I want to help them. I want to help develop them. If there's something I can do that will, if they've got a stuck point on a project, and it's something that I can help with, you know, maybe it's a challenge I've solved previously, then I'll try to help if I can. And I think where that is positive for CTA is CTA isn't just about depth of knowledge, which comes from being a specialist and spending all your time doing like a few amount of things, but also about breadth. And one of the ways that you get breadth is by managing and delegating to a team. So to become a CTA, it's, although entirely possible, it's unlikely that you're going to be just a developer, because your exposure and your interest needs to be a lot broader than that, than the problems you can solve just by writing code. And so by having a team that is, you know, defining process, gathering requirements, writing code, it kind of forces you to delegate a lot of that work, which allows you to focus on the breadth of the solution, which is so necessary for not just for the CTA process, but I think just being a sort of end-to-end architect.
Sure. And you've obviously, as we've spoken throughout, you've worked in big, medium, and now small consultancies. What do you think the value, and we've kind of touched on this throughout, but like, what do you think you've taken from each?
Yeah, so there's pros and cons for all, and I definitely don't feel that like one is better than the other, because I think it's quite personal in kind of where you are in your career. I think starting off in a big consultancy can be really great, because they're often set up in such a way to bring in new graduates or people who are brand new to the platform. And there's structure in place to get you started, get you learning, you know, and you're part of a wider community as well. Not only for learning Salesforce skills or kind of specific technology skills, but also broader consulting skills. So I think that there was a lot of good that came from me joining Accenture as a graduate, you know, both on the Salesforce front as well as kind of general consulting skills. let's see what else. I think there's positives in the sense of having, you know, these large complex engagements with multiple teams, but there's also negatives there. So positives is you often, you get exposed to these kind of big hairy challenges, and you're kind of, you know, you're working within a team, and you're very specialized, which means that you're kind of working in one domain area and you can go quite deep in that area, which is pretty powerful. Maybe the downside of that is because those projects can last such a long time, I think not as good for your learning curve overall versus if you do kind of like more of a 3 to 6 month project. Mm-hmm. And if you're kind of on the smaller projects, then you have to wear more hats. And so there's benefits to that as well. So instead of, you know, just being the guy who writes the code or writes the requirements, maybe, you know, the guy that writes the code also has to write requirements or has to do a bit more process work.
And now obviously growing a team, and you've hired in the past, but aside from the technical skills, what do you always look for in the people you're hiring?
Yeah, so this continues to be a learning process for me, but something that I've come to value maybe above all else is just great communication skills. It's having great communication skills and having a great attitude. Because if you can take someone who communicates really well, they've got a great attitude, they're really good to work with, and they just love getting stuck in, then you can basically put that person absolutely anywhere. So that's what we're trying to do as much as possible within CloudWorks, is just to try our best to find those people, because we're finding they'll do a great job where you put them.
Yeah, nice. And then just finally to sign off, you've spoken about not kind of going now too deep into Salesforce and kind of looking more at process and but what area of Salesforce are you most impressed with right now in terms of the platform and the product?
So I think the bit that I'm most excited about is how, there's a few things. I think predominantly is how Salesforce is bringing out more and more features that allows you to do more without having to write code. And that's kind of something else that I've kind of learned in my journey, that you can write code to solve any problem. But I think someone who's really good at what they do in Salesforce is really good at not writing code, if you know what I mean. Like they know exactly how they can get the most out of the platform without always having to use code as a solution. So I really like how there's more and more features coming out that allows you to do more without writing code.
Yep.
I'm really excited about all of the features that are coming out with respect to machine learning, especially a lot of those are also kind of configuration based as well. So that's really exciting to me. I think maybe those are the main two. Obviously, Lightning Experience has given a lot more flexibility with respect to user experience. So I'm also kind of very excited about any feature that kind of gives you a new way of doing something. So
sure.
I don't know, just as an example, you have like the actions component, which is kind of like, you know, instead of having buttons to kick off a quick action or a lightning component, et cetera, you now have like a dedicated component for kind of servicing any kind of action you want to perform off a record. So things like that add a lot of usability, I'm really excited about.
Yeah, just making the user's life easier every release, right?
Exactly.
And if our listeners want to connect with you or contact you in any way, where's the best place to hit you up?
LinkedIn. LinkedIn is probably the best place to hit me up. I basically accept everyone who asks to connect with me.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like there's two people in the world. There's the type of person that will, you know, guards their network and will only allow people in if they've met them or kind of respect them. And then they have the other people who kind of just like, you know, the door's always open. So I'm kind of more of a doors always open person. I'm much more into broadening my network versus kind of keeping it really, you know, tight-knit. So, hit me up on LinkedIn.
There I was thinking I was special to get an accept from you.
Sorry, I think I literally accept everything. Sometimes to my detriment, because I think it makes people think that they can start selling me things.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just never entertain those conversations on LinkedIn. So yeah. I don't think I've got the right balance necessarily in kind of letting everyone in.
Yeah.
But it's worked out it's worked out okay so far.
So they can add you but not sell to you. I'll make sure that one's clear.
You're probably not going to be successful. You're going to sell to me, but I will absolutely accept your invitation. And if you have a genuine question for me, I will absolutely try my very best to respond.
Perfect. Well, look, thank you so much. I really enjoyed the chat, and I'm sure our listeners will too. So, yeah, really appreciate that, Chris. And
yeah, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me. It was a blast.
Yeah, thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talent Hub Talk.
If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and also leave a short review. We're keen for this podcast to reach as many people in the Salesforce ecosystem as possible, and your reviews will help us do that.